Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Milliken win!
Now from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Morning on KMOX. Obviously, huge news today as the St. Louis Blues relieve Drew Bannister of his duties and hire Jim Montgomery back to the organization, a five-year contract. To talk about it, we bring in Blues broadcaster, part of their team, FanDuel Sports Network Midwest's Andy Strickland on KMOX. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Tommy. Thanks for having me, as always.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us on such short notice. Obviously, it's huge news that came out this morning. Shocking news in some ways, but then in others, no. I mean, Montgomery's name connected to the Blues. It's a very Doug Armstrong-like, aggressive move, I feel like. What do you think?
Well, it reminds me of when they fired Davis Payne and they brought in Ken Hitchcock. You know, I don't think people were anticipating the move with Davis Payne. He had signed a contract extension. It was early in the year. It was in November. But, of course, Doug Armstrong and Ken Hitchcock go way back, and they had a relationship, and Hitch was available, working as a consultant at the time with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So, again, that made sense. And I think this one makes sense, too. I mean, Monty obviously has a long history with the Blues, not just with Doug Armstrong, but even dating back prior to Army being a member of the organization. You know, obviously, Jim Montgomery, you know, playing here in his younger days. You know, his wife is from St. Louis. He played with the Missouri River Otters back in the day as a player coach in the United Hockey League. So he spends his summers here. So he's got a lot of history, knows a lot of people in St. Louis, and, you know, was part of the coaching staff just a few years back. So, you know, when he was fired a few days ago by the Boston Bruins, I think a lot of people were trying to connect the dots and assume that this was in play and this was going to happen. I don't think people, you know, expected it to happen as quick as it did. But, you know, you got a situation here with Jim Montgomery where his contract is expiring with Boston at the end of the year. You knew he was going to want to get back behind the bench. I've talked to him since he was fired from the Bruins. And, you know, listen, he still felt like he had plenty of energy, and he wasn't looking just to wait out the rest of the season and take this into the offseason. If the right situation came calling here this year, he was going to jump at it. And that's what happened here with the Blues.
When the Bruins got bounced early in the playoffs last season, there was some speculation that he could be let go then. Do you think the Blues were talking about it and could have pounced then?
Well, they couldn't have pounced then because he was under contract with Boston and they hadn't, you know, let him go, right? Mm-hmm. So he was a member of the Boston Bruins, and they, you know, had every intention of bringing him back. I will say the decision in terms of what they were looking to do in terms of the Blues last offseason, I know Jim Montgomery was always in the back of their mind. They knew this was the final year of his contract. And they elected to go with Drew Bannister. And they interviewed other candidates, specifically some college candidates, some guys that are high-profile names in NCAA hockey. And those didn't work out. But at the end of the day, I think always, Tom, I mean, the Blues knew that Jim Montgomery, the way the season had started, his lack of playoff success. And I will point out that the Bruins and Monty did engage in contract extension talks, and they couldn't come to an agreement. Now, whether that's because the team, or there's a good possibility that's on Monty too, where he didn't like what he was hearing, you know, in terms of the direction of the team and the future of the team, and maybe the relationship that he had with management there in Boston became a little bit too rocky for him to want to commit to the Bruins too. So I think that was, you know, in part what led to him being fired a few days ago. In addition to the 5-1 loss to Columbus, you lose at home to 5-1, you know, to Columbus 5-1 when things are already going south. You know, that's probably a game that will get you fired. But I think both sides knew that the time was coming to an end, and they were going to be parting ways after the season, regardless of how the season went anyway. So, and listen, once that happened, once Jim Montgomery becomes available, I think if you're Doug Armstrong, you have to really sit back and evaluate things. And you look around the league, and there's going to be other firings here too, Tom. I mean, typically you get to that 20-game mark. This is when general managers and ownership, you know, start to truly evaluate where their team is at. And, you know, there are other coaches who are on the hot seat. And the last thing you want to do is allow a guy that you want to bring on board get eaten up by somebody else, you know, and all of a sudden now he's off the board and he's not available. So once he's there and you know you're going to have to make a move at some point, I just don't think there's any reason to hesitate. Just go ahead and do it.
What do you think has gone wrong with the Blues? I mean, obviously Drew Bannister is the face of this and loses his job. Players, the way the roster was constructed, does it all factor in together?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the injuries obviously this year, you know, have probably interrupted some of that chemistry that you were hoping to, you know, create both offensively and obviously on the back end too. You know, Philip Roberg being down with an injury right now, you know, obviously forces players to play higher up in the lineup where you traditionally wouldn't have them play. So they're playing more minutes and seeing different responsibilities than you would typically want in a perfect world. You know, Robert Thomas going down, you know, for 4 weeks, you know, that was difficult. They brought on a lot of new players, like you said. And, you know, I think the biggest challenge for this team coming into the year was going to be, you know, how are some of these guys, how are these different pieces to the puzzle going to come together? You know, and now you've seen players kind of take a step back, Tom, when you look at, you know, Alexander Texier, who's been a healthy scratch. He's not even really playing, not even, you know, having a hard time even getting in the lineup, you know. Matthew Joseph maybe is taking a little bit of a back seat. And then you look at your high-end top players offensively, how many of them have had, you know, extended stretches with no production, whether it's goal scoring or points in general. You know, we saw that with Pavel Buchnevich. They were playing him out of position a little bit. Now he's playing on his natural wing position with Robert Thomas being back. But, you know, he went several games without scoring. Brandon Saab went several games without scoring. Shen, Thomas, Kyrou, I mean, you name it. You go down the line, you know, a lot of guys have been struggling. I mean, Jake Neighbors is leading this team in goal scoring right now with 7 goals. So, and you look at all the – it's interesting, Tom, because people ask me in the summertime, well, what led to the Blues bringing Drew Bannister back? And if you look at his record, he was 31-19-5, so that was a part of it. You know, they won some games last year when he took over. But all the categories that you point that are connected to coaching, goals against, that really improved last year, power play really improved, the penalty kill got better as well. Those were all areas that showed significant improvement when he took over for Craig Berube last year. And then you look at those numbers right now, and they're among, you know, the worst in the league in pretty much every single category that I just mentioned, you know, near the bottom. And what's interesting is the Boston Bruins are at the bottom in a number of those categories, too. I mean, their power play is dead last in the league. And their best players hadn't performed at the expectation level that they had coming into the season when you look at David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand and some of these guys. So, you know, they have similar issues. But Jim Montgomery's a hell of a coach. You know, he's known as a player's coach. He will frustrate you at times because he likes to go to the blender and he mixes up lines like crazy. Joel Quenneville used to do that for several years here in St. Louis and throughout the course of his career. So, listen, they're not afraid to make in-game adjustments. They have a feel for the game. But he is a guy who can certainly connect with younger players. And they've got a lot of young guys coming in. But it's a familiar face, a familiar voice, a relationship that's already intact. It just made too much sense, Tommy, not to go in this direction.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that in our final couple minutes here. What is Monty's best attribute, do you think? You might have just said that he's able to blend veterans and young players, it sounds like, is one of the best things he does.
Well, he's a communicator, really good communicator. And listen, I think he's going to, you know, ignite a little bit of a spark here with the fan base, which has maybe been waiting for that this season, Tom. I'm sure you can feel that too. You know, whether it's the Cardinals or the Blues. I mean, traditionally, the coach or the manager is almost as popular as the head coach or as the players. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they sell tickets too. You know, Tony La Russa sold tickets. Mike Martz sold tickets. Dick Vermeil sold tickets, you know, towards the end of his tenure. Joel Quenneville sold tickets. Craig Berube sold tickets. Jim Montgomery is going to be a guy that I think is going to be able to get people excited to head down to the Enterprise Center to watch the Blues for the rest of the season. There's a lot of runway left. And you look at the Western Conference, I mean, there's a lot of teams that are kind of jam-packed right there in the middle, right? And not a ton of separation. I mean, you have some teams like Winnipeg and some of these teams that have really, you know, kind of separated themselves early. But there's been a lot of teams that have underperformed. You know, Colorado got off to a rough start. They've played way better as of late. But I think the Blues feel like, hey, you know, coming into the season, they felt like they had a team that was good enough to make the playoffs. The way they were playing, there was no chance they were going to make the playoffs. This is an effort to see if they can kind of right the ship and get on a run here and get back into it. And they gave Jim Montgomery a 5-year deal. This is a major commitment they're making to him. And I tweeted out the other day, if I was a head coach, I'd want a 5-year deal minimum if I had any leverage, because these coaches are getting fired 2-3 years into their contract anyway. So he's going to have some time to get things together. They've got a lot of first-round picks that are coming here, as you know. And it should be a good fit. I'm really excited to see how this goes, Tom.
As am I. Jim Montgomery is the new coach of the Blues, a 5-year deal, as Drew Bannister officially announced fired this morning. Andy Strickland, FanDuel Sports Network Midwest, thank you so much for joining us. And might I add, please subscribe to his podcast with Cam Jansen, camandstrick.com. Just subscribe and you will be happy that you did. Thank you for joining us on short notice today.
Okay. I appreciate it, Tom. Have a great day.
Thank you. Andy Strickland with us on KMOX. Josh Schertz, head coach of the Billikens, is with us next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Welcome back, Sports on a Sunday morning. Our conversation with Andy Strickland to lead off the show. You can listen to it now on the Odyssey app. It'll be up on our Sports on a Sunday morning podcast page. Big news from the Blues. They relieved Drew Bannister of his duties and signed Jim Montgomery to a 5-year contract to be their head coach. He is reunited with the organization. Bernie Miklas will join us at 10:35 to talk about that. Right now, we get into some college basketball with the head coach of the Billikens. Our visit with Josh Schertz is sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Good morning, Coach. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing all right. How about you, Tom?
Doing well. I'm sure you're doing better than you did late Friday night. Just some time to absorb what happened at Wichita State. It was interesting. I mean, you had what I thought a good competitive first half with Wichita State, and then for whatever reason, the second half completely got away. How do you review that now that you're 48 hours removed?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, you know, first half we controlled a lot of it. You know, we were up most of the way. Didn't play great, but we're playing well enough. We went into halftime down 3, and that was with shooting, 3 for 14 from 3 and 4 for 11 from the line, including missing, I believe, 1 or 2 front ends of 1-on-1. So it was really like 4 for 12, 4 for 13 from the line. And so shooting variances happen. You have nights like that. Good teams buckle down, figure out a way to kind of, you know, get across the finish line. I thought, you know, came out second half and had some good looks, didn't go down. And I thought we let that, you know, obviously affect our effort defensively. Thought we got sad, and instead of really knuckling down and hey, all right, we're not making shots. We're not giving up anything defensively, really tightening the screws. I thought, you know, it kind of went the other way. And then, game got away from us. It was just, when adversity hits, you got to have a collective and purposeful response. I thought our response was the exact opposite of that, and so needs to be better. We can't live and die with our shot making.
Yeah, and you won't get away with that against anybody. Certainly not Wichita State. Aggressive, downhill. They love to make contact, get to the free throw line type of team. And I was at Chaffetz yesterday on the women's side. I didn't see any of you anywhere. I'm assuming there was no practice yesterday. More of a messaging type day.
Yeah, we didn't practice yesterday. There was a very, very long film session and discussion about, you know, what we're going to be moving forward. And I think, you know, look, these things happen in the season. You know, results are results. I think, you know, you're going to win, you're going to lose. That happens in every year. I think the but you can't lose that way. You can't let go of the rope. You know, you can't give in when things get hard, and because things are going to get hard. And you know, and again, there's a level of, like, you know, we talk all the time, you know, the two things you can control. You know, we talk all the time about competing together. You can control, you know, how you compete, and you can control how connected and together you are as a team. Those things require no talent. Those things don't require shot making or anything else. And I thought we didn't do those things in the second half at near the level that, you know, we need to be. So long time together in film watching it, and then a long time discussing, you know, what our internal standards are. And again, these things, you know, depending on how you look at it, a lot of times you have something like this, it could be a springboard. It could be something that you look back and say, man, that was great. It happened. Sucks when you're going through it, but it's great it happened, because that was really a springboard for growth. To become a team, you have to go through stuff. You have to go through adversity, you know, and we've had some injuries otherwise, but this is how you grow. And if you have a good group, you know, these type of moments are you grow from it, you learn from it. It's a springboard. You look back on that and go, man, you know, that really was bad. We went through it, but man, we're in a better place because we did.
No, that's a really good point. And, you know, watching your teams through the past few years, especially at Indiana State, I don't remember a team being like that. But as always, it's a new roster every year, isn't it? I mean, you have to reteach sometimes your foundation to every single group, and that's happening right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, you come in, you can't transpose culture. You know, you know, we had a great culture at Lincoln Memorial, a culture that was about, you know, the team and being a great teammate and doing the job, doing your job the very best of your ability and competing together as a team every single night and how you prepare. And then I went to Indiana State and, you know, we started from scratch. And, you know, the first year, we had some games like this, like we had my first year in Indiana State, just like we had against Wichita State, where, you know, it gets hard, and guys, you know, when it gets hard, the tendency, a natural thing is, okay, well, it wasn't our night. You know, you can blame it on shooting variance. Oh, man, you know, we're 6-for-30 from three, and, you know, our, you know, Gibb and Swope are 1-for-15, you know, that, you know, like, we can't make a free throw, whatever. You know, we didn't lose that game because of that. You know, I mean, you dig in, you win those games out the mud, and you figure out a way when you're where you need to be. So we have to learn from it. I mean, you know, it's a growing, teaching moment. But yeah, you can't come in and the culture that we had the last couple of years in Indiana State, you know, I think was the seeds of that were planted in year one when we went 11-20. And I'm hyper focused on, you know, what are our internal standards, driving those, making sure that this group competes together, does the right things, prepares the right way. We have to have growth in those areas to then that's really where, if we do that, the results will take care of themselves. I know, you know, fans, media, it's a result-based business. I get that. Internally, I have to be really focused on our process, our standards, what we're doing, what are we accepting, what are we not going to, what are non-negotiables, and making sure that everybody inside that locker room and inside of our program understands, you know, what the standards are and that what the consequences are when we don't reach those standards.
Josh Schertz is with us live from St. Louis University. Just one quick thing before we go, an update if you would. I know everyone's kind of hanging on to hear anything new on Robbie Avila. Is there anything you can offer?
Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, so he's making progress. You know, the swelling is gone. I think, you know, pretty much pain-free. You know, he did some 3-on-3 yesterday in the half court, you know, did some work last night with the guys, you know, some of the bench guys and walk-ons. And so he's going to, you know, we'll see. He's going to try to practice today. Today would be his, you know, his first practice, obviously, you know, that happened on the 4th, so it'll be 20 days out. You know, his first practice in 20 days, first time he's done anything 5-on-5. But he does feel, you know, good enough to give practice. What does that mean? He's going to play tomorrow? I wouldn't say that. You know, certainly I wouldn't say it's out of the question either. You know, maybe it's tomorrow, maybe it's Wednesday, maybe it's, you know, Jackson State. But things are trending towards, him returning to the court. I know he wants to get out there. I know he's been frustrated, obviously. These back-to-back injuries have knocked him out. You know, we've talked about almost, I think, 45 of the last 57 days he's missed. So it's going to be a process back, but he's going to try to, you know, get in the court, do some contact stuff today, and that would be, you know, and we'll see how that goes, and then make a decision tomorrow how he feels when he wakes up. If, you know, hey, we maybe want to give it a go, maybe we want to wait a couple of days, see, you know, we'll see what it looks like.
We'll see tomorrow. And so sorry to hear about Josiah Doetzler's knee injury, torn ACL and MCL. Yeah. He's going to be finished. Seems like such a great kid. And sorry to hear about that. I'll be there tomorrow, Quinnipiac, on the TV side, 7:00. We'll have it on the radio side. Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr., 6:45 pregame. We're looking forward to seeing your team hit the floor.
Look forward to it. See you guys tomorrow night. Be a really Quinnipiac, really good team. And we're excited. We should, you know, have a chance to respond. And I know our guys are looking forward, chomping the bit to get out there. Hope fans stick with us. We'll get there, and hope to see everybody tomorrow night. Should be a really good basketball game.
Yeah, you've gotten some good crowds. Those are going to just continue to grow. We appreciate it, Coach. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Josh Schertz with us on KMOX, sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Always good to catch up with him, and I appreciate him jumping on, and we moved the time a little bit. Had a meeting coming up here in just a few minutes and gave us some extra time after the loss 88-63 to Wichita State on Friday night. That was a late one and obviously a frustrating one to deal with.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Yesterday, and as you heard right there, long film session for the Billikens yesterday. No practice. They were off their feet. But today, they're going to give it a go with Robbie, see how he looks. And the chances of him playing doesn't sound like very high, but we'll see. Tomorrow when the Billikens take on Quinnipiac right here on KMOX. We will take a break. When we come back, right back into the Blues move. They have fired Drew Bannister. They have hired Jim Montgomery, a 5-year contract for him. We heard from Andy Strickland at the start of the show at 10:05 in a very good session with him. We appreciate that. Bernie Miklas is going to chime in here in just a few minutes, live with us on Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX. I'm Tom Ackerman. Don't go anywhere. We're in the Stiefel Sports Studio, and we're sponsored by Gray Bar. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, 10:34. I was just talking to Drew Young, our producer. It's just another example of why I insist everything as much as we possibly can is live, even early on a Sunday morning, because wouldn't you know it, but at 8:13 or whatever it is, Doug Armstrong announces that Drew Bannister has been let go and Jim Montgomery has been hired to a 5-year contract. So, you know, things happen very quickly in this sports world, and certainly in St. Louis, there is never a dull moment. And we bring in, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, our dear friend Bernie Miklas to chime in on this as well. Good morning, Bernie.
Tom, good to be with you as always, my friend.
It was quite the morning as the Blues make this big move, big news, huge news, I would say. But that said, not totally surprising to me, considering the connection with Jim Montgomery. I just think the abruptness always takes your attention and your breath away. What did you think?
I thought it would happen. It was just a question of the timing. I didn't know that how long Doug Armstrong would wait. And that combined with, well, what kind of other interest is Jim Montgomery receiving as a coaching free agent? And if you waited too long, I mean, he was going to be snatched up. And the thing of it is, I mean, it's not too hard to connect the dots here. Actually, it's ridiculously easy. Doug Armstrong would have hired Jim Montgomery 100% to take over last summer, had the Boston Bruins elected to fire Montgomery then, but they elected to keep Montgomery to go into this season, only to fire him early in the season. So if Doug Armstrong, who is very tight, very close, really admires Jim Montgomery, and a lot of it has to do with the work he did, the outstanding work he did as an assistant coach here. And you're also talking about a guy with a 660 points percentage as an NHL head coach. And when he was in Boston, the whole time he was in Boston, the Bruins had a 715 points percentage, which blew the rest of the NHL away. So when someone you know very well and someone who has done great things already for your organization, when he becomes available, and that's the guy that you had at the top of your list last summer, when he becomes available, you've got to hire him. I mean, I don't think that this is too complex. I think it's pretty easy. And I know that Bannister didn't get a fair shake in terms of time on the job. I totally get that. But I was reading a piece this week by a friend of mine who's a great analyst and was pointing out how the average shelf life for NHL coaches is like, it's never been more tenuous as it is now. These guys are fired all the time. So if a Doug Armstrong is going to fire Ken Hitchcock, and then later on he's going to fire Craig Berube, like, why would anyone be like shocked that he would fire Drew Bannister? Come on now. Let's put our thinking caps on this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I see fans already saying, boy, the Blues are so proactive, you know, opposite of the Cardinals who slow play everything. I do see the sports different, though. You know, the NHL is known for, look at just the Blues history. I mean, Andy Murray, he's fired. Davis Payne comes in. Davis Payne's the next guy. Nope, he's gone. Ken Hitchcock comes in. Ken Hitchcock, legend, Hall of Famer, fired.
Right.
Fired. And Mike Yeo takes over. Mike Yeo is going to be the guy. Nope, see ya. Craig Berube, they win the Stanley Cup. Berube's going to never buy a beer in this town again. You're gone. Drew right. Bannister takes over. Drew, he's perfect for us. Young guy, you know, young team. He can go. Goodbye. He's gone after like 10 minutes. And here comes Jim Montgomery. I mean, this sport really is something, but we're used to it.
Well, and the other thing, I must admit, and I sound like I'm being way too fussy this morning, so I apologize to people for being so fussy. But, you know, some of the interaction I've had on social media and elsewhere, you know, it's kind of like, well, they're rebuilding. So what did they expect? They're not rebuilding.
No.
They had 92 points last season, which was a good year for them based on their evolution as a team that was in a retool. 92 points last season. This season, after bringing in Broberg and Holloway and Suter and several others, he added to the roster. He brought in more talent. And they're on a pace for 71 points, which would be 21 points less than last year. So, again, I don't understand the disconnect here that some people are just like, you know, can't figure this out. And they are not a real rebuilding team. Now, the thing of it is, we can all disagree with Doug Armstrong's assessment that he believed this was a playoff team. That's what he believes. We can say, well, he overestimated them. That's fine. But as our friend Jeremy Rutherford reported, you know, Doug Armstrong made it clear that his expectation was a playoff spot. And if he waited any longer, you know, they were getting worse. That's the other thing. They were getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Tom, their 5-on-5 game has completely collapsed. And they're one of the lowest scoring teams in the league. And even their goal prevention, although in the last few games it's been fine, even that's been cracking. Like, for example, the previous two seasons when the Blues allowed 3 goals or less, they had the 6th best record in the National Hockey League. This year, they're way down in terms of winning percentage when they allow 3 or less because they're simply not scoring. And then the other thing we've seen in terms of points per 60 minutes, we've seen a lot less this year from Robert Thomas. This is a rate stat, points per 60 minutes, because I know he missed time. His production's down. Kyrou's production's down. Jake Neighbors' production is down. Zach Bolduc has disappeared. Buchnevich is having, in terms of points per 60 minutes, he's having the worst season of his career based on that metric. So when you have some of your very most important guys And all of them are sort of have declined this year so far compared to recent seasons. And then you have all these young players on the way, and Jim Montgomery is admired for his ability to work with young players. Thomas and Buchnevich and Kyrou all swear by him. Buchnevich credits him for making him a better all-around player when he was here as an assistant to Berube. I mean, pardon the cliche, this is the proverbial no-brainer. And I appreciate what Andy Strickland said as well. You know, the Blues are in the entertainment business. And let's be honest here, they got the worst record in the league over the last month, and they're not scoring goals, and they're incredibly dull, and even their star players are dull because they're not producing as they have in the past. So the arrow on every single thing you look at was pointing down, a hard down. So what, you're not going to hire a guy who's suddenly available, who over the last two-plus seasons by far has the best winning percentage by an NHL coach? That I would think Doug Armstrong would like resign and step down if he didn't hire Jim Montgomery, because it's just silly to continue down this path.
I'm with you. And I will say, and now you got me all riled up because now I'm going to be all negative here. But I will say that, you know, when it comes to the Cardinals and Blues, with respect to City and the Battlehawks and the Billikens, let's face it, the Cardinals and Blues are the two big dogs in town. They've had the long history here. And I look at the two teams similarly right now, although the Blues are kind of a step or two ahead, a year or two ahead of where the Cardinals wanted to be in terms of redeveloping their player development system and all that stuff. But, you know, who are the stars out there? I mean, when I was growing up, it's like, I want to go see Ozzy because I want to go see somebody that does something no one else in the world can do. I want to go see Brett Hull because he's one of the best in the world at what he does. You know, the Cardinals and Blues together here have got to figure out how to grow stars and be at their best so that the kids are wanting to go see them. They want to wear their jersey. Where are the stars? That's what I want to know in this town.
I totally agree with you. And like with the Cardinals, it's such an obvious thing. And I think it's part of the reason why they've had a hard time, you know, keeping their attendance at previous levels. And also just the number of no-shows were pretty glaring last season. And part of it is a lack of star appeal, and no disrespect to Goldie or Arenado, but they're at a different phase in their career, and they're stars in terms of their careers, but not in the moment. But the Blues, listen, they've got so much invested in their young talent. It was one of the reasons they went into this retool. And one of the reasons they were able to, you know, pawn off some players and get draft picks and, you know, load up with first round picks. And they've got some guys, you know, on the way that are really exciting, like Dvorsky and Jimmy Snuggerud. Bolduc, I mentioned him, he's like a non-factor this year. That shouldn't be happening. Neighbors, all of a sudden, his productivity's down. That shouldn't be happening. So it's really imperative for the Blues to get the absolute best they can out of this new wave of young talent. And they can't have a guy like Buchnevich fall down as far as productivity, because he's so huge to their fortune. So I don't have a problem. In fact, I agree. Doug Armstrong has made some terrible personnel mistakes. He has. However, is that a reason not to make a coaching change? Like, in other words, so Doug Armstrong screwed up some stuff roster-wise. So what? He's going to sit in his office and say, well, I can't change the coach because I made a couple of three bad personnel decisions, so I'm just going to let this ride. I mean, does anyone really believe that type of thinking? You don't do that. Yeah, I mean, you put a roster together, and they have a better roster than they did last season when they had 92 points, and it was very much underperforming. So no matter what Doug Armstrong did in terms of constructing the roster, he's got to think about this moment right now because the season's at stake. If you don't act now, you're not going to be able to turn it around. So he's doing what he's paid to do, and I appreciate that, even though happy to recognize the mistakes he's made as well. But this has nothing to do with this coach and the fact that Jim Montgomery was available, the best free agent coach you could hope that would be on the market. I mean, Jim Montgomery, again, best record in the league in terms of points percentage, over the last two-plus seasons, and he won big in Dallas before having, you know, he went through his personal crisis, which thankfully he's dealt with admirably.
Buddy, I had a rough day yesterday at the start of the day, and it turned out to be a great finish to the day. It finished with the Musial Awards and Billy Crystal and Bob Costas. My daughter Audrey got to meet and visit with both of them, which was really neat. And then they go out and have this unbelievable night at Stiefel Theater, and Larry Fitzgerald's there, and Salvador Perez. It was an awesome night. But there was something else that happened that night. After Indiana loses at Ohio State, which was tough. I mean, I didn't expect them to go in there and dominate, but I thought they would play a good competitive game. They did for a half. They lose the game 38-15. Damaging. Here come all the SEC people hollering about, see, I told you, Indiana's got the soft schedule. They can't win against ranked teams, blah, blah, blah. Then Alabama goes down. Ole Miss goes down. Texas A&M goes down. BYU goes down. Colorado goes down. I mean, one after the other. And Indiana suddenly is projected back in the playoff. It was a chaotic day yesterday in college football.
I don't see, Tom, how, and I'm not saying this, buddy, because you're a dear friend of mine, and I'm kind of invested in Indiana because of your passion. And I wanted to see them, you know, play a heck of a game, maybe steal a game yesterday. But Ohio State was really, really good. Their defense just, after that first scoring drive, I mean, Ohio State's defense just buried them. I mean, that's just basically what happened. But the thing of it is, we can talk about strength of schedule, and I get it. I do think that that's something you take a hard look at. But Indiana can only play the schedule that they were handed this year. And the fact is, they're 10-1, and the team that they lost to is ranked second in the country, Ohio State. And, you know, at some point, you know, you can't be such a snob about strength of record. You got to recognize a team that's 10-1 in the number one or number 1A conference in the land. And that means something. That's really significant. And just because you lose to Ohio State, and just because maybe you didn't play enough top 25 teams or whatever, again, they don't choose their schedule. So I don't know what people want. There's something to be said for just winning games in a year, as you just mentioned, leading us into this, where Ole Miss soiled the bed. Alabama soiled the bed. Colorado soiled the bed. Who else are we leaving out? I mean, all these teams lost, and now some of these teams have three losses. And, you know, if people want to play the game and they say, well, if Indiana and Alabama met, you know, who would be favored? It probably would be Alabama. But that doesn't justify the fact that Alabama's lost a couple games they had no business losing this season. And you say what you want about Indiana, that was not a good game yesterday, but that's not a game that anybody of sound mind expected them to win. I mean, they were two touchdown I forget what those point spread was.
Yeah, it went from 13.5 down to like 10.5.
So this isn't like Alabama losing to Oklahoma. This is a game Indiana should have lost. So and if you look at like the playoff predictors you can find at ESPN, you know, Indiana's in great shape. I mean, the only thing that could go wrong is, you know, screwing up and losing to Purdue. And I don't think that's going to happen. So anyway, and I thought Ohio State was really bush league with some of the stuff at the end of the game, and just not even, you know, scoring a touchdown. They didn't have to score, but just some of the histrionics on the sideline, kind of taunting Frank Signetti. Oh, good for you guys. You beat Indiana. Wow. Well, boy, you're at the top of the mountain now.
It's kind of fun for me. It's like, I love being involved in this kind of bitter stuff in late November. Like, it's a first for me, so I kind of like it. Like, I'll get in the mud now. Now, unfortunately, Indiana doesn't play Ohio State next year, but that would have been fun in Bloomington, no doubt about it. You know, last thing here is that, you know, in college football, Bernie, it's just hard to win. It was proven yesterday. Indiana won 10 games, most by double digits, except for the game against Michigan. They fought their way through it and won. It's hard to win. That's why I think if you're an Illinois fan or a Missouri fan, you should take a step back at the end of this season, assuming that they can win their final games, and say, you know what? That's a good season for those programs. CBS is projecting right now that Missouri will be in the Music City Bowl in Nashville on December 30th against Michigan. If you beat Arkansas and you beat Michigan on national TV and go 10-3. That's a heck of a year for Eli Drinkwitz, and I don't want to hear it any other way.
No, it is. It has a disappointing factor baked in because the schedule was so favorable. So this would have been a year for them to get into the playoff, right? But listen, we're seeing it, as you just made the point 2 or 3 minutes ago. there are teams, good teams, teams that are better than Mizzou, quite frankly, that are going down left and right, you know, and having their seasons wrecked. So that's why it's good to have a healthy perspective, which you do. And yeah, if Mizzou can have a 10-win season after an 11-win season, well, that's not exactly typical Mizzou in the history of the program. That's still a very impressive achievement if they get there. But to tell you the truth, even 9 wins, I think, is a good season. Maybe a tad disappointing because there was so much talk about them making the playoffs this year. So maybe a tad disappointing, and that's okay if some people are disappointed. But don't sneer at what they've done. Don't sneer at 9 wins or 10 wins, certainly. That's kind of ridiculous.
I agree with you. Bernie, you are a must-follow on YouTube and subscribe to The Bernie Show. That is absolutely something you need to do. And while you're there, subscribe to KMOX Sports because we have the Gas House Gang tomorrow at noon. Kevin's going to take tomorrow off for Thanksgiving week, but he'll be traveling. You, me, Matt Pauly, noon, Gas House Gang, KMOX Sports, YouTube, and social media channels. We'll get into Cardinals, but we will absolutely talk about this Montgomery Bannister news for sure tomorrow.
Right, Tom. And by the way, I'm going to record, I'm going to do a Blues video about the coaching change. As soon as I'm off with you, I'm going to do that. Just if you don't mind, one more plug.
Yeah.
Just so people can follow, can go look at that later at their convenience if they're inclined to do so. So thank you, man.
Absolutely. I know they're all listening now, so they'll be ready to go. YouTube, Bernie Miklas at The Bernie Show. And again, he's sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, and we love having him. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap up the show, get you ready for Chiefs Panthers next. 10:55. We just have 2 minutes left, Drew. So why don't you go ahead and hit the music, and we will get right into it. These are our NFL picks for Week 12. Last week, looks like I just did a quick count. I think I was a game or two over 500. So that's good. Not my best, but good. And good enough, I think. Anytime you're over 500 picking against a spread, it's good. Let's see what we got. Minnesota at Chicago. The Bears, 3-point dogs at home. I really like the Vikings here. As much as Chicago played a tough, hard-fought game against the Packers last week, lost in heartbreaking fashion, I like the Vikings. I think it's a really good football team, and they will cover the 3 at Chicago. That's a noon game. Detroit at Indianapolis. The Lions are the best team in the NFL. They win. They are -7, and I think they cover it. New England at Miami. The Dolphins are starting to warm up here. Dolphins are warming up here. 7.5-point favorites at home against the Patriots. I'm going to go Patriots, though, +7.5. I don't love that half. I'm going to give the Patriots the hook there. Tampa Bay at the Giants. I will go Giants +6. Dallas at Washington. Boy, Dallas is horrible. But it's a 10.5-point spread. Goodness gracious. Washington -10.5. Kansas City is a 10.5-point favorite at Carolina. I will take the Chiefs there as well, -10.5. Tennessee at Houston. The Texans are 7.5-point favorites. Give me Titans +7.5 there, keeping that one tight. Denver at Vegas. I like the Broncos here, -5.5. San Francisco at Green Bay. I'll take the Packers -6. Brock Purdy's hurt. Packers -6. Arizona at Seattle. Give me Arizona -1. Philadelphia at the Rams. Give me Eagles -3. Baltimore at the Chargers. Give me Ravens -2.5. This is KMOX.